Hey everyone, husband here.
And I'm wife. If you've been listening to us, then you know we're all about reading the Bible and reacting to it on our first read-through. Cuss words, crying, laughing, and more.
We're passionate about creating a podcast that takes the sanctity out of the sacred text and simply stating it as we see it.
But we can't do it without your help. We're asking for your support to help us keep this podcast going.
There are two ways you can donate.
Text SACDIS, that's SACDIS, to 533-555 if you're in the U.S. with a one-time donation. Any amount helps.
Or if you'd rather start a sustaining membership, sign up on our Patreon page at patreon.com/sacrilegiousdiscourse. Membership levels start as low as $2 a month.
We are amazed and grateful for our fans that support us now, and you can become one too.
With your support, we can keep Sacrilegious Discourse alive and well for years to come.
So please donate today.
Text SACDIS to 533-555 if you're in the U.S.
Or sign up for our Patreon page at patreon.com/sacrilegiousdiscourse. Welcome to Sacrilegious Discourse.
I'm husband.
And I'm wife.
Together we're reading the Bible for the very first time.
We grew up without religion and wanted to know what all the fuss was about.
Well, what have we learned so far?
That God is a dick. And apparently some people believe in talking donkeys?
We're not trying to pass ourselves off as experts.
Nope, we're just reading the Bible for the first time and giving our first take reaction.
If you'd like to join us in this venture, you might consider starting at episode 1.
Otherwise, jump in wherever you like.
Alright, let's go read the Bible.
Yeah, let's get to it. Husband!
Wife!
How's your unit?
I'm sorry, what?
The look you just gave me. So, you know how we're in a unit right now of oracles?
Oh, no. I was having trouble remembering because it's been so many days.
Yeah, sorry about that. There's a lot to cover. And so, toward that end, I think we're going to make this a two-parter.
Okay.
A two-parter Q&A, not a Saturday.
Right. Okay. And to that end, I'm not sure when this is all going to pan out because this is taking extremely longer than we ever anticipated to do the research for this. So
I know. I'm sorry. You kept coming in and going, how much longer? And I'm like, another hour at least.
Oh, no, but that was for like 3 days.
Yes. Yes.
For 3 days I was going in and asking.
Yes. Just one more hour at least.
What? Wife doesn't have the best sense of time.
No, I have zero sense of time.
Right, right. That's what I meant by not the best.
Yeah. So what we are going to cover today is the Q&A for chapters 46, 47, 48, and 49.
Okay.
Which is all of those oracles about all the other nations that Jeremiah is addressing.
Right.
And then they're basically all of them except Babylon. So,
got it.
The part two will be the Babylon chapters, which is 50 and 51.
Mm-hmm.
And then that weird epilogue chapter 52.
That was shit.
Yeah. And then I will hopefully be able to also introduce a little bit more information about this weird unit as a whole.
Got it.
In the part two.
Got it.
And that's kind of what's been holding me up. I'm just like inundated with how many chapters is that? 46, 47, 48, 49, 50, 51, 52. That's seven chapters.
Well, and this was a weird placement. Mm-hmm. I mean, like everything was weird about this section that we've been covering. So like it's not a normal, it's not normal.
It's not a normal format. And I did not anticipate how much research there was going to be and how long that would take me.
Well, and if I'm to guess, I'm guessing that it's not really in the same vein as the rest of Jeremiah. So it's very much different and unique.
Right.
So
right. Because we also will have a separate Jeremiah as a whole wrap up.
Right.
Which almost makes it a part three in a way.
Right. Right.
So,
but again, if we're wrapping up Jeremiah, there's a lot to Jeremiah that's not this section either.
Right. So, that's what I'm saying. So,
and since we're covering this for over 2 days, we could probably almost make that a side note
right.
for what we're covering for these 2 days.
Right. Exactly.
So we may be stretching this whole thing into like Sunday. I'm not really sure where we're going with all this, but
we're a wreck.
It's
we're a mess.
But we're back.
We're back. We're back. We're here. We didn't leave.
No, we just.
I just am not a good.
All right. So that being said, you said we're covering what today again?
Jeremiah chapters 46, 47, 48, 49.
All right. You ready to do this?
Sure. Yes. Yes. Yes, I am. Yes. All right.
Let's do this.
Okie dokie.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Okay, here we go into this Q&A covering 500 chapters.
There were three.
Four. Yeah, four chapters. And some of it will sound a bit repetitive because it is.
Right.
And because also we did a Q&A already for 46 before we realized we were going to be doing this whole unit thing.
Got it.
So just putting it out there that in order to have this be a cohesive thing, I might say a few things that I've already said before, such as that the oracles against foreign nations is what this unit is.
Right.
And it does consist of chapters 46 through 51.
Okay.
But we're only covering 46 through 49 because 50 and 51 are about Babylon.
Right. And there was a lot of material.
Yeah. We want to do those separate.
Yeah.
So in the Septuagint, which is the Greek translation, this unit, these chapters, came in the middle of what we call Jeremiah chapter 25.
Right.
And which is chapter 32 in the Septuagint.
Okay.
And this suggests that the oracles circulated for a time as an independent unit. And that's why I asked in the intro, how's your unit doing? See?
Just for the record, we did not do a Q&A over 46. Yet.
I really thought we did.
No. The last set of chapters was 41 through 45.
Well, my mistake.
I had a sneaking suspicion, so I went and checked real quick. So.
You know what? You're right, because I wasn't doing separate Q&As. So I covered this in the chapter itself, my notes.
No, we were doing separate Q&As still.
Not for Jeremiah chapter 46. We were not doing separate Q&As.
Right.
I'm saying that, okay. All right. At any rate, some of this might sound familiar, and if you know, you know.
All right.
Okay?
Yeah.
So this series brings together a number of messages that Jeremiah announced to foreign nations over the course of time during the many years of his ministry. So we're talking about from the time he was a youngin and just starting his ministry all the way through when he got killed.
So is that why we're supposed to accept the different writing styles and the different.
Sure. That's it. Yeah. Yeah. And also because Baruch, his scribe, his assistant,
yeah,
his little partner in crime, his secret agent,
co-conspirator.
Yeah.
Right.
Wrote some of it.
Yeah.
And somebody else gathered it all up or whatever.
It's just that none of these chapters felt. And there might have been like one or two exceptions throughout the whole thing, mm-hmm. but none of them really felt like anything Baruch or Jeremiah had written previously.
Right.
So it just doesn't sit well with me. And there's a lot of it that I feel was even while they were in Babylonian exile, especially mm-hmm. I know we're not covering it today, but like chapter 51 for sure.
Mm-hmm. You was mean, yeah, 51.
Definitely written yeah. while they were in Babylonian exile.
For sure.
Like, I mean, well, I don't know that for 100% fact myself, but I based on what they said, mm-hmm. there are some things, and I think some of this other stuff was written in Babylonian exile as well.
I agree with you, but that kind of goes along with the next thing I was going to say, which is that just as a reminder, the order in which these messages, these oracles to the other nations,
yeah.
the order they've been arranged in does not follow the order of the events they announce. So they're not in chronological order. The arrangement is more according to the geographic location of the target countries.
Right.
And they start with Egypt in the south, and then they move north and east towards Mesopotamia, ending in, of course, Babylon.
Sure.
Okay.
Yep.
And the climax of the series deals with the nation that dominated the affairs of most countries in the region. Spoiler alert, I already just said.
Egypt.
Babylon.
Oh, Babylon. I'm sorry. Well, Egypt was a big player too.
So. Yeah, but that's not the climax, right, the big bad.
Yeah, no, I got you. I'm sorry. Okay. I was half listening because our cat's making noise, so.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
So, in this first chapter here, chapter 46, we're dealing with Egypt.
Okay.
Okay, so you weren't totally wrong or far off.
Right,
where we're starting.
Sure.
Okay, and prophecy number one covers the defeat at Carchemish. Okay.
Yep.
Verse 2 read, it was on his way to Carchemish, located in modern Turkey near the Syrian border. Oh, I'm sorry. This isn't a verse. I'm referencing a verse. Referencing verse 2.
All right.
Okay. Yep. It was on his way to Carchemish, located in modern Turkey near the Syrian border, that Pharaoh Necho had slain King Josiah of Judah in 609 BCE,
right,
when Josiah tried to turn him back. And Pharaoh kept his army in Carchemish 4 years, dominating the area and waiting for the inevitable confrontation with rising Babylon.
Got it.
Okay, so this is supposed to be like early on.
Sure.
Okay.
And that makes sense. Like we talked about it throughout the chapters that there was some, I mean, just some political / warfaring things going on, and Israel happens to be in the middle of it all.
Yes.
So.
Yes. Now, when it came, the Egyptians were rooted. In 605 BCE, the army of Nebuchadnezzar defeated the troops of Pharaoh Necho at Carchemish on the northern Euphrates and pursued the troop to the border of Egypt.
Okay.
The Babylonian armies chased the fleeing Egyptians south and came to Jerusalem.
Okay. Right.
So the soldiers were called to battle. They were quickly routed. The voice, we heard the voice of the victorious Babylonian army in Jeremiah's imaginations of how it would sound and how it would look.
Yeah.
And then we saw proud Egypt get destroyed. And then Egypt was not to be cured from their affliction. So, referencing verse 11, the association of balm with Gilead. I don't know if you recall that verse. They mentioned something about the balm of Gilead.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
That is likely an allusion to the fact that caravans from the east bearing supplies of balm often pass through Gilead.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the defeat of Egypt at Carchemish was famous because it marked the beginning of Babylon as a true superpower in the region, and simultaneously the decline of Egypt as the superpower.
Got it.
Okay.
Okay.
So then we move on to prophecy number 2 regarding the invasion of Egypt. Okay.
All right.
And Egypt was helpless to defend themselves against Babylon's army. So in verse 16, they called Pharaoh a noise, which we talked about that meant a braggart, a bombast, a loudmouth, all talk, full of lip service, like basically, you know, just talking shit.
Yeah.
Shit talking.
Right, right.
Okay. And then in verse 20, Egypt proudly thought of herself as strong, great, and beautiful. And God said that they were strong and pretty like a young cow that was just ripe for sacrifice.
Right, right.
Okay.
Yeah, so I do remember we talked about a lot of this while we were reading it. So.
Yep. So I was right and you were wrong?
No. You were saying it wrong. So,
okay.
But it's okay.
But I was still right and you were still wrong because you're always wrong.
Okay.
The reference to Egypt in verse 22, gliding away like a snake. Do you remember that? They were like, Egypt's going to glide away like a snake.
Yes.
Okay. It's a sarcastic comment on the humbling of Thoth, one of Egypt's most revered national deities. And it was one that was prominent in the royal insignia.
The snake, whatever.
The caduceus.
Like, right.
Yeah, the snakes wrapped around the staff.
Right.
The Egyptian god Thoth was equivalent to the Greek god Hermes and the Roman god Mercury.
Okay.
Okay. So then we moved into the certainty of the judgment upon Egypt. And then God, of course, says that he will preserve Israel because he always says that.
Right.
Right. And then that's the comfort that he offers to his chosen people.
Got it.
Okay.
Yep.
So that was chapter 46 summed up for you.
Okay.
Okay.
Yep.
Moving into chapter 47, that is the prophecy concerning the Philistines.
Okay? Right.
So this prophecy is odd because there is no historical evidence of any Egyptian king smiting Gaza.
Right.
Whereas verse 1 talks about how that totally is going to happen.
And it was always my understanding that the Egyptians were really good at keeping records.
Mm-hmm.
So that is more than odd.
Yes.
Yeah. It's probably not true.
Yeah.
If I had to guess.
Exactly. Exactly. It was no doubt smote by some of them, like little skirmishes, that's the word I was looking for, but when or by whom does not appear in any written history.
Got it.
So they might have lost a little town or city on the edge or whatever now and again,
right,
but they always maintained their power.
Right.
So this attack, that whatever we're talking about that we have no evidence of,
yeah,
is likely to have occurred when Necho was marching to Haran in 609 BCE.
Okay. Yep.
And Pharaoh Necho's campaign had a twofold purpose. One, it was to prop up a tottering Assyria against a powerful Babylon, thus maintaining the balance of power.
Okay.
Okay. And then two, to extend his own empire in a time of international chaos.
Got it.
Okay.
Yep.
So then we hear that there's going to be a judgment coming from the north. And we're going to get into that in a minute, because me and you, for several chapters, we were like, what the fuck does that mean? Like, Babylon was from the north. So is it north-north that some evil power is coming? Well, in
these chapters, they were referring to Babylon, from what I understood.
Yes and no. Like I said, we're going to get into that.
Okay.
Okay? Because when we get to Babylon, they're saying somebody from the north is going to get you. And we were like, what are you talking about? Babylon is north. So,
at least that's how they had referred to them, we thought.
Yes, yes. So there are some northern things north of Babylon.
Okay.
That is, like I said, we're going to get into that.
Right, right.
Okay. So then we talk about the sword of the Lord against the cities of the Philistines. Do you remember that the fucking sword? The sword of the Lord. Okay. And then they talk about the afflicted cities. And in verse 4, they talk about to cut off from Tyre and Sidon or Sidon.
Okay.
And that was likely meant that any available Phoenician help would be prevented from reaching Philistia. Tyre and Sidon were Phoenician cities, not Philistine. But they were probably in a desperate alliance with the Philistines against the force of Babylon. So basically, like, all these various little nations were suddenly finding themselves teaming up with their worst enemies just to try to fight off
right.
Babylon. Because
well, if I recall correctly, I think we've talked about Tyr before as like a major trading hub mm-hmm. in that area. So mm-hmm. like that would have been an important people to
right.
have on your side or have to cut off from somebody. I mean, it would be a big deal.
Right. And like these little nations, they would have the word that you used earlier was perfect. They would have skirmishes and they would raid each other.
Sure.
But that was not this whole overpowering empire rolling over them.
Right.
So like Babylon made its own bed here because they were like, we are going to take all of you down. And they kind of did. But then they, you know, in the end are supposed to get theirs.
Yeah, yeah.
So the new international version explains a little bit more clearly with regard to they talked about baldness, like this nation will be bald.
Right.
And then the way that they phrase that in the new international version is that Gaza will shave her head in mourning.
Yeah.
So, you know, as they did.
Right.
Okay. The Septuagint, the Greek translation, describes the valley that is referenced in these verses as the remainder of the Anakim in place of the remnant of their valley. And the Anakim, recall, were the race of giants.
Right.
Said to have lived in the southern part of the land of Canaan. So got that's it. Fun.
And then they were still there.
They're still there. Yeah.
Which
they were still is there.
Funny.
Yeah.
Because we read about them all the way back in Exodus.
Mm-hmm.
Because I remember they didn't even go into Israel. They were at Israel like within the first like chapter or
Canaan.
Two. Or Canaan, yeah.
Yeah.
And they didn't go in because, you know, yep. there was hypothetical giants yeah. that they were going to
fight. It was a beautiful land full of milk and honey that they were scared to enter because of the giants.
Right.
Right. So use of the term Anakim seems to link the people of Gaza and Ashkelon with the race of giants that inhabited Canaan, just as you said, before the arrival of the Israelites.
Got it.
So,
yeah.
There you have it. They're okay. still they were still alive to that very day.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
And then we hear about Jeremiah speaking to and hearing from that sword. And this dialogue between the sword of the Lord and the prophet is a form of personification about which there are several legends.
Okay.
And we talked about like one of them being Excalibur, but there are several others where the sword is prominent.
Right.
As a character in the story.
Right. So, but you said at the time that they're not necessarily related directly to this sword.
No, they're not related. It's just interesting that so many different nations throughout history, you know, repeat
right.
similar themes.
Well, I mean, and I think we commented on this at the time too, but war is a big deal for these people in those times because
survival.
Yeah. Well, and yeah.
Land grab.
Right.
Resources.
Exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's no consensus as to when this prophecy was delivered. That's going to make it super exciting when I do like the unit as a whole deep Wrap dive.
Up. Yeah.
Yeah. It may have occurred during the fourth year of Zedekiah, but others assign it to sometime in the reign of Josiah.
Okay.
So
sure.
Zedekiah, Josiah, who fucking knows?
Right.
Okay. So that was 47. Now we're moving into Jeremiah 48, the prophecy concerning Moab. Okay.
Yeah, which I thought they were gone too.
Yeah, they were supposed to be. They were supposed to be. So we start with the judgment to come against the cities of Moab. And the ancestor of Moab came from the incestuous pairing of Lot and his daughter. And that was described way back in Genesis chapter 19.
Yeah.
Okay. Moab was something of a cousin to Israel. Like they were related, but like,
but they were incestual, so, you know.
Yeah, like, these are gross. They feared Israel as they came from Egypt towards Canaan, and that was described in Numbers chapter 22.
Uh-huh.
Recall, Balak, king of Moab, hired Balaam to curse Israel.
One of my favorite chapters.
I know, the fucking talking donkey.
Definitely.
Like, that's the one where I'm like, oh, you believe everything in the Bible is literal, so you believe in a talking donkey.
I mean, it's literally in our fucking intro. Like, that's, we reference that in our intro.
I know, so. That's why I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
All right, I can't with you. We have nothing to discuss here. So when Israel came into Canaan, sometimes Moab attacked and ruled over them. Like they had those back and forth moments. And that was described in Judges.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Later, Ruth the Moabite was the great grandmother of King David. And David sent his parents to Moab for their protection when Saul was hunting them.
Right.
Remember all that?
And I do.
David had to hide in a cave and
a lot of caves, actually.
Yeah, and
it was more than one cave.
One time he was close enough to pee on Saul or something.
Well, Saul was peeing and he was close enough to grab his balls, basically.
Yeah. That was in 1 Samuel.
Right.
So yeah. When he was king, David fought against and defeated Moab, and that's in 2 Samuel, and they became a vassal kingdom to Israel, sometimes rebelling. So they never really disappeared. They just kept being there.
Okay.
And sometimes they would gain a little bit of power, and then Israel would smack them back down.
Right. It's just, it pisses me off a little bit because God always... Back when they were talking about getting rid of all these people in Canaan,
mm-hmm.
he was like, kill them all, get rid of them all.
100% across the board.
We commented on it for multiple, maybe even multiple books. I'm not really sure, but they just kept popping up.
And we're like, wait a minute. Fuck? I thought they were gone.
They kind of disappeared for a while
mm-hmm.
in our readings.
Yeah.
And now here they are again.
Right.
And I'm like, oh, well, so literally never got taken care of, apparently.
Not at all.
Not even
kill them except for one or two that got away.
Right.
Literally, these are flourishing little tribes.
Right, right.
These are entire cities of people.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So this message was delivered sometime after the destruction of Jerusalem. The Moabites were in the neighborhood of the Ammonites, and whatever evils fell on one would naturally involve the other. So just to give you some perspective on the situation, Moab was one nation that tried to form an alliance with Judah against Babylon.
And that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And even the prophecy against Moab or about Moab was very, very much like the prophecy for Judah.
Yeah. I hate you die. And then right at the other end, but you will have remnant right. save you.
It almost sounded dead on the same prophecy for Judah.
Because they are cousins.
Right.
That's why.
Yeah.
So he's like, I didn't choose you, but I didn't not choose you.
Right.
So yeah. I guess you can kind of stay, but mind your P's and Q's, mister.
They're like the Canada to the United States.
Are they?
Or are they
the United States to the Canada?
Well, yeah, however you want to put it. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I think
we'll take you. You can come with us.
Yeah. So the terror of judgment coming upon Moab is what the next few verses are about.
Yeah.
And Moab was super wealthy because important trade routes came through their land. Their treasures made them proud and self-reliant.
Got it.
Okay?
Yeah.
Geographically, Moab was more isolated than Israel and Judah, both of which were located on the main trade routes and which were also surrounded by several other kingdoms.
Got it.
Okay. Moab's isolation enabled the city to escape many of the international upheavals, which weakened its neighbors. And so that's why we didn't hear about them for a while, because they were just flourishing
doing
over there.
Their own thing.
Yeah. And just making money.
Right.
They were like, we got bank.
Sure.
We're good. We don't need to raid you for a bit, a few centuries. You'll be fine.
Right. Moreover, other people don't need to raid them because they can just go there and buy their shit and go back and do whatever they need to do.
Exactly. The Moabites were often able to strengthen themselves at their neighbor's expense, though.
Got it.
So I guess they did send out a few raiding parties
sure.
and be like, oh my God, this yard sale. I can totally buy this candy dish here for 10 cents and then sell it for $5,000 on eBay at Moab.
Right.
Yeah. That's how that went.
Right.
So Chemosh was somebody that was referenced in these early verses of this chapter. And he was the national god of the Moabites and was sometimes used as a representation of the people themselves. So sometimes instead of saying Moab did this, they would say Chemosh did this.
Got it.
So kind of like the way you would talk about the Christians, like their God is Christ or what the fuck.
Yeah, yeah, right? Yeah.
Right. So you would just talk about this tribe by the name of their God.
Sure.
And in their conquest, the Babylonians would take the literal idols of Chemosh and the people of Chemosh into captivity. And the reason that we don't like Chemosh in particular is because the sacrificing of children was an important part of the Chemosh worshiping cult.
Got it.
So God was like, you're gross.
Right.
Stop.
Well, more like other people were like, you guys are gross.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yes.
Point taken.
Yes.
Right.
And recall that Solomon married Moabite women.
Right.
Like he married lots of women.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Some of which were Moabites.
Didn't Moses also possibly marry a Moabite?
Yeah, we already covered that.
Okay, yeah, sorry. Yeah.
But Solomon built an altar to their god. Because remember, he married women from all over. Yeah. He was just like trying to make business deals and fuck.
Yeah.
And like he just combined the two.
Yep.
He was the networking king. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And
I bet that's what he called it too. Networking.
Mm-hmm, totally. You
know? Yeah.
Yeah. So he built an altar to the Moabite god, Chemosh, and he erected a high place for Chemosh in Jerusalem.
Oh, wow.
That was in 1 Kings.
Yeah.
And so we did talk about that.
Sure.
And these were all demolished under Josiah's rule, and that was in 2 Kings.
Got it.
So, you know, he like had all these different kinds of altars and ways to practice your religion for all the women that he married.
Yeah.
He brought that home. And then when Josiah took over, he demolished all of that.
Well, it was really funny to me when we were reading those chapters about him, Solomon, that is.
Mm-hmm.
And like he was good most of the way through all of the books of Solomon. But then right at the end, they just tossed in the, but he did all these bad things and here they are and blah, 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 blah. And he slept with all these women and he sucks.
And the anyway.
And yeah, right. And the end.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, shit.
Right? And what I find really funny, too, is that, like, in reading the Bible, we're supposed to hate him and think that he was doing terrible. And I think even at the time, we were kind of led to that way of thinking. But since then, I've been kind of thinking about it. And I'm like, actually, he was a kind of good leader if he was trying to bring all of these different religions and allow people to practice whatever religions that they wanted.
Well, I don't think we were supposed to hate him. They actually referred to him quite well until that last chapter.
But we were supposed to hate that part of him.
Sure.
That's
sure.
what I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just, like, don't. You know?
Right, right.
So I'm like, I'm not, I'm kind of anti-religion, but also freedom of religion, like freedom from religion, but also freedom of religion.
For sure.
So I think it's kind of cool that he wasn't like, this is the only religion we can practice here. He's like, no, man, I got 500 wives and each one has a religion.
Right.
So I don't know. There's something kind of cool about that.
Yeah.
So whatever. Anyway, in verse 8, they refer to a valley. And that's the Jordan Valley, which touched Moab on the west.
Okay.
Okay. And then we learn in the next few verses about a complacent Moab and how it must be emptied. Okay. So in verse 11, it says, Moab has been at ease from his youth. He has settled on his dregs and has not been emptied from vessel to vessel, nor has he gone into captivity. Therefore, his taste remained in him and his scent has not changed.
Basically, they haven't been challenged.
Yeah. And the reason I included that was because it, like, in context with everything else, we were like, there was a cup and there was drinking and there was this, like, there was too much. And this verse by itself makes sense.
Right.
Like, if you're not reading all the other things around it.
Yeah.
But we got really lost in all of the wine and drink and cup.
Right,
and
like, right.
But yes, this verse in particular is exactly what you said. This refers to the ancient process of refining wine. After fermentation, the wine would sit in a jar or bottle, and all the impurities, the dregs, would settle to the bottom, kind of like coffee grounds in a cup of joe.
Sure.
Okay. And the liquid would then be carefully poured into another vessel, leaving the dregs in the first vessel.
Got it.
And doing this a few times made for a wine with fewer impurities to spoil the taste.
Okay.
So one secret of the corruption of Moab had been that of its comparative ease. So it hadn't been poured from one vessel to another,
right,
challenged, like you said, to get rid of those dregs.
Got it.
And as the city lay outside the normal route of the invaders of the Middle East, it was thus rarely disturbed. And Moab's self-renewing riches in its bountiful vineyards and flocks of sheep, along with its lack of conflict with neighboring communities, bred more complacency than character.
It's funny that this, you know, Israel had so much trouble over the years, and yet Moab, who is not under God's purview, seems to have flourished just fine for quite a long time.
Yeah.
And they were even the ones that were sacrificing children and shit.
Yeah.
I think as much as they talked about people who sacrificed children and things like that and idols and what have you, I think it must have really pissed off the Israelites because they seem to harp on it a lot.
Yeah.
They're like, those people over there are doing fine. Why isn't our God treating us as well?
Yeah. And to me, that's a fair question.
Right.
Like,
assuming you believe in God.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, they were maybe, I have to wonder, like, were they really sacrificing children as much as, like, the Bible says they were?
I mean, who knows? Like, yeah, I mean, I don't know.
I don't know. It just seems like, no, really? I don't know about that.
I mean, I can't speak to that because I don't know the answer to that. But obviously they were doing it sometimes.
Right.
And it was enough to make it into the Bible and bother them.
Right.
To be fair, if there was any child sacrifice going on with any religious cult today, I'd be very, you wouldn't take but one.
Yeah.
For me to be disturbed by it. So, you know.
That is true. Yeah. fair point. So having said all of that, then we move into the calamity that is to come upon Moab. This is where, you know, Jeremiah starts like doing his speechifying about how y'all gonna get it. Y'all gonna get it.
Right.
And so then after he like repeats himself 10 times about how you guys are gonna get it, then we learn the complete nature of the conquest of Moab. Okay. And Jeremiah listed at least 14 specific cities or landmarks in Moab, urging them to humble themselves and prepare for the judgment to come. 14 specific cities or landmarks.
Wow.
That's a lot for like one chapter, one city. Like, I'm just kind of blown away because he mentions like a few here and there in the other chapters.
Right.
So it's interesting that we're talking about Moab, which again, was supposed to have been wiped out early on.
Yeah.
And yet here they are. And, you know, Jeremiah like knows them well enough and is comfortable with them and knowledgeable about them enough that he's naming all these different things about them.
Right. Right.
You look like you had something you wanted to add.
No. I've got something I want to interject later that I wanted to look up real quick. So I did that.
But
not right at the moment. So.
Okay. So we move on, and then proud Moab thought itself better than Israel. And I mean, kind of they were, sorry, but you know, except for child sacrifice, they were.
Yeah.
So
right.
Fair enough. But proud Moab is gonna be brought low. And then there's going to be mourning for Moab because boo-hoo-hoo, you know.
Right, right.
And then we get unrelenting judgment, except for it's not unrelenting because then there's a glimmer of hope. So I don't know why it's phrased as unrelenting when but it relents.
Right.
So fuck off with that.
And when God sort of likes somebody or let's just be honest, when the prophet who is talking or the people who are talking in the said book like somebody, there's always that glimmer of hope at the end.
Yeah. He's like, I'm going to 100% kill you, but 75% only.
Right. And we talked about it during the chapters that we read recently, and that's that the ones that they didn't really care about, they didn't have those glimmers of hope.
No, not at all.
It was only the ones that they did like.
Like Babylon.
Right.
Near the end, hate you forever, die.
Right.
Yeah. Even though we'll get into them, but
right.
Yeah, they don't actually get there.
Yeah.
So verse 43 reads, fear and the pit and the snare shall be upon you, O inhabitant of Moab, says the Lord. He who flees from the fear shall fall into the pit, and he who gets out of the pit shall be caught in the snare. For upon Moab, upon it, I will bring the year of their punishment, says the Lord. And I remember when we read that, then I was like, that sounds so goddamn familiar. Like, we have read this exact line somewhere.
Right.
Lo and behold, these verses are freely borrowed from the book of Numbers.
Oh.
And they reflect Balaam's earlier oracle against Moab.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Huh.
I remember that there was like a snare and a trap and a climb out. And even if you climb out of the trap, you're still stuck in the snare.
Well, that goes to my thinking that these weren't written by Jeremiah or Baruch, and they were written later in, like, during the Babylonian exile.
Mm-hmm.
And it felt like they were written by somebody who was pulling information from
these
earlier books.
Yes, so, because they were written in the style of the earlier books.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I totally agree with you there.
Yeah.
So verse 47 reads, "Yet I will bring back the captives of Moab in the latter days, says the Lord." And the Moabites were partially restored, but never again to their former glory. And they were eventually swallowed up by Christianity.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So then they went away into history. The end. Bye-bye.
Got it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So now we are at Jeremiah chapter 49.
Okay.
Okay.
Yep.
And this is the prophecies concerning, are you ready for it?
I'm ready.
The Ammonites, Edom, Damascus, Kedar and Hazor, and Elam.
That's right. It was a bunch of short little snippets inside that last chapter, inside this chapter.
It was.
Yeah.
Correct. Yeah. This is, I think, the last one, because then 50 and 51 are about Babylon. So this will be the last chapter that we're Q&A-ing today.
Okay.
Okay.
Right, yeah.
So let's start with the judgment against Ammon. Okay.
Yep.
The Ammonites lived north of the Moabites on the east side of the Jordan River in what is today Jordan, whose capital today is Amman.
Got it.
I did not know that. That's interesting.
Right.
The punishment of the Ammonites is mainly due to land grabbing or wrongful land acquisition.
Okay.
Okay. You know, like all of them.
Right.
But that was specifically their fucking crime.
Yeah.
Okay. So in the first verse, there's this question about the Ammonites having taken Israel's inheritance.
Oh, okay.
And, like, I don't know if you recall, so I'm just going to read part of it. Why then does Milcom inherit Gad and his people dwell in its cities?
Yeah, I do remember that.
What the fuck is all that?
Right.
So the Ammonites occupied land that had been supposedly reserved for the tribes of Gad, Reuben, and Manasseh.
And I think we talked about that. Like, I think we did mention that. Because I think I it did strike me that that was one of the tribes that had that land. They were actually on the other side of the Jordan. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, but that, because they were the ones that wanted to stay early on, remember? Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And then we stopped. Again, there was a lot of tribes we stopped hearing about, but they were one of the first ones we stopped hearing about.
Yes.
So.
Yep.
So that's what happened. Probably got swallowed up by this. Yeah.
Yes. These people followed Milcom, who was an Ammonite god equivalent to Molech.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Marduk was another name that he went by in that area.
It's one more interjection here, because it strikes me that a lot of these things that happened where when their tribes started disappearing for reasons, right? Mm-hmm. We didn't hear about them. We didn't hear about these things happening.
Right.
All we started hearing about was this general consensus that they were doing wrong in the eyes of God, and we just stopped hearing about them entirely.
Right.
And so it was an easy way to forget about that big deal they made about all these 12 tribes.
Yeah.
Right? And then all of a sudden, it's just all Judah.
Yeah.
And Benjamin makes it a little further into it than some of the other tribes, but like it was mostly just Judah.
Yeah.
Right. And I just think it's funny that we then later cover these tribes that got swallowed up by other groups that they never got rid of in the first place that they were supposed to.
Yeah.
And it's not, they're not making any big deal of it. It just happened.
Yeah.
You know, like we're mad at these people because they did this thing to our tribes, but like, you were mad at those tribes because they weren't worshiping God correctly. So which is it?
Yeah.
And why didn't we cover this already? Why weren't we talking about this when it happened? Why didn't you write something down about this? I bet you did, but I bet it didn't make it into the Bible.
And gee, I wonder why. So Marduk, Molech, Milcom, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
He had been worshiped here with rites of child sacrifice since before the days of Moses.
Oh, okay. All right.
Like, damn.
So this was Canaan. I mean, this was, yeah. Okay.
So that tracks.
Right.
Right.
Which, essentially, we've talked about this too, but Canaan is probably where the Israelites came from anyway.
Right. So, like, exactly. It's not,
they all kind of spawned from the same thing. This was, essentially, Israelites were just a different sect of Canaanites. Mm-hmm. That's all there was to it.
Exactly. Exactly. So we talk about the coming days of judgment for the Ammonites. And God, through Jeremiah, promised a day when Israel would possess these lands on the eastern side of the Jordan River. It can be argued, of course, that this prophecy is yet to be fulfilled, given that historically this has not taken place.
Right.
I was like, yeah, it's good of you to mention that. Now, apologists come in and they're like, but Revelations, though, okay, spoiler alerts, because we're not there yet, but I guess it's yet to come, or what?
According to the Christian Bible, and according to the craziest book in the Christian Bible, from what I understand,
right? Exactly.
So, I mean, whatever. Do with that what you will, I guess.
Yeah, totally. So then we talk about the coming captivity and a promise of mercy.
Yeah. Right. Right.
Sound familiar?
The standard. Yeah. The standard.
All right, so that was the Ammonites, okay?
Yeah.
Now we're doing the Edomites,
okay?
They were also a cousin nation to Israel.
Sure.
Their founder was Esau, the son of Isaac and twin brother to Jacob.
Wasn't Esau the one that wrestled God in the desert?
I believe so.
Yeah.
Yes. They also lived in the lands east of the Jordan River and the Dead Sea, toward the south mountains and deserts.
Okay.
Okay?
Sure.
We talk about the time of Edom's punishment. And while Judah was being pressed upon by Nebuchadnezzar in 589 to 587 BCE, Edom not only gave assistance, but seems to have collaborated with the Babylonians.
Oh.
Right?
Okay.
And so I'm like, oh, interesting.
Okay, so like this is the part that I love. I love the
political
politics.
The political intrigue is your jam.
Right. Yeah, and it makes it that much more likely
that Jeremiah was doing and Baruch
were probably in cahoots with this whole thing, right?
Because, like, other nations were too.
Not only other nations, but other nations that are closely related to Israel / Judah, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're, it doesn't, it's not a far cry to say that somebody important was
important somebodies, because Jeremiah had some friends in high places. Yeah,
but it doesn't make it totally makes sense that they would be pushing this mantra, this idea.
So I mean, this did nothing but confirm that further,
right?
You know.
Yeah.
So then we call about a call to trust despite losing everything.
Okay.
Like, you know, you still got to just trust God. He's going to take care of you.
Yeah, whatever.
Okay. The cup of judgment for proud Edom. Mm-hmm. And then the astonishing judgment to come upon Edom. Okay.
Yeah.
So whatever. The end of that. Okay. So I don't know what happens to the Edomites, but
this is another reason I don't believe Jeremiah wrote this shit, is because Jeremiah was all about giving up to the fucking Babylonians.
Yeah.
And if they were helping the Babylonians, then he didn't give a fuck about the Edomites.
Yeah, so, exactly.
Whatever.
Yeah. So we move on to Damascus now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
We talk about weak Damascus, ready for judgment.
Yeah, they didn't. There was no coming back for Damascus, from what I recall.
Let's talk about them.
Okay.
I have a few more notes on Damascus than the other areas.
Okay.
Damascus is the famous city of Syria, and it is one of Israel's neighbors to the north.
Sure.
Damascus is one of the oldest continually occupied cities of the world.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
Cool.
Very.
It was taken by David in 2 Samuel, then was retaken in the reign of Solomon in 1 Kings, and regained its independence for a time. And the city has been conquered by Assyria in 732 BCE in 2 Kings.
Okay.
So it takes a licking and keeps on ticking.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Its kings were often at war with the 10 tribes. And once it joined with them for the destruction of Judah.
Huh.
Interesting.
Yeah. I kind of vaguely remember something like that happening, actually. There was, I don't remember what book it was in or what chapter or anything, but I remember that there was people that came from those tribes to talk to the. I can't catch the thread, but I know exactly what I'm thinking of.
There's too many kings and too many cities.
Right, yeah.
And too many skirmishes.
But it was, like, there was a reference to this. It just wasn't spelled out. Like, right. And I if I can come up with it, I'll try to come up with it and get back to everybody.
Yeah, I just, I'm having a hard time, as I always say, putting what we're reading today with what we've already read.
Right.
Because I didn't grasp it fully the first time around.
Sure.
I can see why people read through the Bible more than once, because you read it through once just to get the story, and then you read it again to put all those pieces together.
Right.
It's like watching the movie Memento.
Right.
Like, you watch it once just to have watched it, and then you watch it again going, oh, or like The Sixth Sense.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, not to compare this trash literature with those fine films.
Right.
Because those are good movies, and this is not good at all. Okay, so to defend himself against these powerful enemies, Ahaz made a league with the king of Assyria, who besieged Damascus and demolished it. From that time, we hear nothing of Damascus until we meet with it in this prophecy. So it was another one that we like hear about and then never again until now today.
Right.
And we're like, oh, there you are.
Yeah.
Okay. It appears to have been rebuilt and restored to some consequence. It made an obstinate resistance to Nebuchadnezzar, but was at last taken and sacked by him. At present, it is both a large and populous city with considerable commerce.
Yeah.
And the reference to the sea must be figurative, because Syria had no sea coast in ancient times. Huh. So suggestions as to the meaning are maybe restlessness or trouble, like, you know, troubled waters kind of thing, like a sea storm, roiling waters, unstable, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So then we read about Damascus gets defeated, but not depopulated. Okay.
Okay.
And scholars have a lot of difficulty fitting this prophecy into any recorded event related to Damascus.
It seems to be an ongoing issue with some of these prophecies in this section here.
Interesting, right?
Yeah.
This prophecy must have been given early in Jeremiah's career, for his ministry began in 627 BCE, and Babylon's conquest of Assyria occurred only 15 years later in 612 BCE.
Okay, this is bullshit. They're trying so hard to make this a prophecy.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a fucking prophecy. It was written in the Babylonian exile.
Yeah.
Like, totally. We talked about this all the way through these sections.
Mm-hmm.
And they can apologize all they want to for this shit.
Mm-hmm.
But this was not Jeremiah and Baruch writing these things.
No, not at all.
And it sounds, every bit of it sounds like it was written post-exile.
And
during exile.
And in the style of the Deuteronomy books, the Deuteronomist.
Yeah, so you will not convince me that these things were written by Baruch or Jeremiah. There's no way. They may have been influenced by, or there may have been a couple of sections that were actually written by them. But for the most part, these things were not written there.
Totally agree, 100%.
Yeah.
So that was that chapter.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
So now we're going to move on to the judgment against Kedar and Hazor.
Okay.
Okay. So Kedar describes a tribe of Arabic peoples descended from Ishmael, according to the book of Genesis.
Sure.
Okay. Is Isaiah prophesied against Kedar, a powerful tribe who used to traffic with the Tyrians in cattle?
Wait, did you say Isaiah?
Yes.
What about it? Say that one more time.
Isaiah prophesied against Kedar, a powerful tribe who used to traffic with the Tyrians in cattle.
Why are we talking about Isaiah?
I have no idea.
Okay.
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 The Kedar peoples were nomadic, and you know what? I wonder if I did that. I wonder if I accidentally wrote Isaiah instead of Jeremiah. That could totally have been what happened. So let's just pretend that that says Jeremiah.
Okay. All right. I'm not sure how much. Are you sure you didn't look up the wrong thing? Or
No.
Okay.
I'm fairly certain, actually, that I can kind of recall that it said he blah, 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 blah. And that I typed the name so that I would, you know, remember the note.
Yeah.
And so I'm pretty sure that I typed Isaiah instead of Jeremiah because
okay.
we've done that a few times, you know, because
yeah.
Isaiah kept being there.
All right.
Yeah. So, okay. Jeremiah prophesied against Kedar, a powerful tribe who used to traffic with the Tyrians in cattle.
Okay.
The Kedar peoples were nomadic and they lived in tents. They kept flocks of sheep and they were shrewd traders. Okay, so then we get into a word against Kedar and Hazor.
Okay.
Okay, so they reference a third group. I don't know if you recall that. And we were like, a third group, third people. What are you talking about?
Right.
Okay. There is no consensus on whether the third group is actually just referencing them.
Yeah.
Or if it's an actual separate third group of people. But... some think that they were the people of the East, and they are known in other parts of the Old Testament. And these people are associated with Midianites and Amalekites, and they are nomadic groups who raided Israelite territory in the days of Judges.
Got it.
Okay. So we're, I think it's probably they're talking about these other tribes
okay.
that lived in the East.
Yeah.
Okay. They talk about conquest and plunder, and that's why they're going to get it, and there's no reprieve for them.
Got it.
We hate them or whatever.
Yeah.
Okay? So then we move on to Elam. Okay?
The
Elamites.
Yeah.
Okay, so Elam is the ancient names for some of the peoples of Persia in modern-day Iran.
Okay.
The Persians were, at first, allies to the Babylonians, and later they conquered the Babylonian Empire.
Oh, so what? Is this that other group that maybe they talked about? Is the Persians the other northern whatever, possibly?
Yes, kind okay. of, yes.
All right.
This prophecy is about their eventual conquest and fall, which we're going to get to.
Got
okay?
it.
Yeah. So Elam is going to be conquered and scattered. Okay?
Got it. Yeah.
And they were a powerful kingdom more than 200 miles east of Babylon.
Okay.
And that was the most distant nation referred to by Jeremiah.
Got it.
Okay, that yeah. was kind of a big deal.
Sure.
Susa, the ancient capital of Elam, now known as Shush, is close to 1,000 miles east of Jerusalem on modern roads.
Wow.
For an idea of just how far-reaching and problematic Babylon's imperialism was.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like that was far reaching.
Right. So this news started coming in and they're like, Jesus.
Yeah. They're like, what the fuck?
Right.
What's a Babylon?
Right.
Yeah. So Isaiah, see, I did it again. Isaiah, supposed to be
And I Jeremiah. Did look it up. You are correct. This is Jeremiah, but
yeah.
you didn't write it down correctly.
I didn't. So. And I apologize. So I don't know. It just happens.
Yeah.
I do a thing.
Right.
So Jeremiah makes a reference to the role of Elam's powerful skilled archers in the conquest of Jerusalem, where they served as allies to the Babylonians.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the message concerning the ancient kingdom of Elam came at the beginning of Zedekiah's reign. And at that time, Zedekiah was trying to form an alliance with other nations west of Babylon with the aid of resisting the spread or with the aim of resisting the spread of Babylon's power.
Got it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they were like, stop those fuckers.
Right.
And that didn't happen.
Right.
So Elam is supposed to be going under disaster and under mercy in the latter days.
Okay.
So we like them. They okay. get to have a remnant, all right. All right. glimmer of yeah. hope, all that.
That's nice so, for them.
This is one of those things where the Babylonians never conquered Elam.
Okay? Right. Yeah.
And when compared with other prophecies of Jeremiah against foreign nations, this one against Elam does not mention Nebuchadnezzar, but refers only to enemies in general. So
Got it.
That's how they're able to say, no, it's still yet to come.
Got it.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
History records that Elam later became part of Persia, which in turn conquered Babylon.
Okay.
So not only didn't Elam.
Right. They were part of the group yeah, that conquered. Like, yeah, yeah.
Opposite.
Right.
So.
Okay.
There you go. Okay.
Yeah.
So that wraps up part one of the unit about the oracles to the other nations.
Just so you are aware, part one lasted about an hour.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So that was a lot of information.
I'm so glad that we broke this up.
Yeah. When the amount of time you were taking research and all this stuff, and I was like, is this going to be like a 3-hour fucking episode?
It would have been.
Yeah. I was like, we have to do something. We can't just not do our podcast because you can't stop finding information. So.
Well, okay. But you can see how this keeps going and going and going. Yeah.
I do have a question though.
Yes.
So, you know how when we came across that magic spell that's coming up in the next Q&A that we're going to do, that's part two, basically.
Yes. In chapter 51.
Yeah. And magic spell / curse, whatever, right? Mm-hmm. So there's a person that we want to interview at some point, and we probably will in the near future. And he's a former pastor of ours who actually married us and is now an atheist.
Which is interesting enough.
Yeah. So that fantastic. And this individual, which I, for now, will leave unnamed, they studied quite a bit of biblical history, and they know a lot of things. So anyway, long story short.
They're very versed in Judaism and Christianity.
Right. Yes. Very. And so I reached out to them about this and my idea about what had happened, and got some positive feedback on it, which made me very happy, because we could not find information directly anywhere about what
was that a magic spell?
That a magic spell? Right. Yeah. But there were some things mentioned about Zoroastrianism and different things like that. And I'm hoping that maybe you're covering some of that aspect of it when we get to that.
We will see.
Okay. All right. I mean, okay. Because I that's the part that I'm like, what?
I know. This you're is so chomping cool. at the bit.
Yeah.
So that concludes our part one Q&A for these weird chapters in this unit.
Yeah.
The next part two will cover chapters 50, 51, and 52.
Sure.
And that will be all about Babylon and that weird postscript. And then we will talk about the unit as a whole.
And magic spells.
And hopefully magic spells.
I mean, I'm just saying.
I know. I hear you.
All right.
I hear you. All
right. So that was our Q&A for today.
Yes, it was.
And
not on Saturday.
Not on Saturday. I'm not even going to try to attempt to see to even say what's going to be happening in the near future.
I know. Because hypothetically, I fucked this all up.
So. Hypothetically, we'll be back tomorrow-ish.
Mm-hmm. With part two. At some point
with part two. Although I'm releasing this late on the night that we're putting it out because we have been so far behind. So,
right.
Yeah, we've got another episode coming in at some point very soon.
Yes.
And that's the best I can say right now because there's so much fucking information.
There is.
So.
Which makes it interesting and fun. This is what we do.
Yeah, definitely. But that being said, we'll see you guys.
Yep. Bye.
Hey, wife, I guess that's the end.
But husband, that's just sad.
It doesn't have to be. We are on lots of social media platforms like Twitter. Our handle there is sacrilegious_D.
For D's nuts.
Oh my God. Stop doing that. Anyway, we're also on Facebook, Instagram, and Pinterest. There's a link to all of our social media sites at our website.
Ooh, we have a website?
Yeah, it's sacrilegiousdiscourse.com, where you can also find a link to our merch shop.
We have a merch shop?
Yep. We have podcast-themed clothing, mugs, notebooks, and more, as well as an atheist and science-themed products.
Wow, our fans should really go check that out right now.
Definitely. They can get in touch with us by sending an email to sacrilegiousdiscourse@gmail.com. But before they do that, we could really use some help.
Oh yeah? With what?
Well, it's not free running the podcast, and we need some financial support in order to get better equipment, which will free up time so we can concentrate on our podcast and our fans.
Okay, so what should they do?
Head over to patreon.com/sacrilegiousdiscourse and sign up as a contributor on our podcast. Supporters there receive additional bi-weekly episodes that we record just for our Patreon members for as little as $2 a month.
Also, we'd really appreciate it if you would like and subscribe on whatever platform you're using.
And Apple Podcast reviews help us out tremendously.
Like and subscribe. Leave an Apple review. Join us on Twitter. Support us on Patreon. That's a lot of instructions. Don't forget to say thanks.
Thanks.
Okay, bye.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.